12-Sided Stories is for mature audiences and often deals with topics that may be difficult for some listeners. Discretion is advised. Brave the dark woods of folk horror with us in this Vasen actual play, The Hidden North. Remember, 12-sided stories are always story heavy, rules light, and full of fright.
Hello, and welcome to The Hidden North, episode number 12. My name is Wes. This is our Vasen actual play, and today we are doing a solo game. So we're doing it with Candace. Candace, introduce yourself.
Hello, everyone. My name is Candace, also known as Candace the Magnificent. My pronouns are they, she, and I am here playing Hildegard Brunson, our wonderful resident doctor, also they, she.
All right. If you've been listening so far, you've heard both Saints and Piper's solo adventures. Next week will be Michelle's solo adventure. Before all this happened, let's talk about what Hildegard was doing in the last episode when everybody was pretty much together. Hildegard was giving a autopsy to a victim of one of the kidnap/murders that had been going on in Uppsala. They were taking a look at the corpse. It had been nailed to a wall right underneath the chin, and so the neck had elongated, and it was pretty gruesome. While looking at the corpse, they found several vines and branches throughout the body instead of bones, meaning that this adult was a changeling who had integrated into human society. Whether or not his partner was a human or not is not known. There are still a lot of questions. There was an odd moment, though, as Hildegard walked up to the corpse. They felt something inside, some kind of stirring of emotion. And hopefully today's little solo adventure will give you a little background into that and why Hildegard is the way they are. That's the whole point of these, is to kind of give you more of a background. We ended with both Elizabeth and Greta in the woods following Linnea, who had been stolen from the asylum after this huge troll went in and killed a bunch of people and then drug her out. They were hiding from it. It came out of the cave. It smelled Greta because she had been baptized, and started to run towards them, and that was the cliffhanger of that game. So now, let's jump in. Real quick, Hildegard, tell us about your sister, and how old is she?
Hildegard's sister is about 6 years younger, maybe 8 years younger than Hildegard is. She is very beautiful. Barely looks like she's from the same family. You can kind of tell there's an approximation of familiarity there, but it almost feels manufactured. She got married right away, had tons of suitors, and lives in Germany, where Hildegard's family settled from France, has a whole brood of kids, and yeah, is thriving there. They don't really talk very much.
Tell us how you grew up and what your sister was like as a baby.
Yes, when I was just young, my family had just moved to Germany from France. We were new to the area, and I had quite a loud little sibling. She was cute, and my parents loved her very much. And I tried to love her. I did love her. Just lots and lots of crying all day, all night. Lots and lots of crying. And I found myself unable to wrap my head around who she was, and trying to get to know her as a toddler, as a child, and to just saw her as a thing in my way to having a better childhood. I loved to read. I loved to stay up by candlelight, and there was no doing that, sharing a room with her. It was very difficult for me to feel those feelings that a sibling should feel.
I was thinking of the name Heidi for her. Is that okay?
Perfect.
All right, cool. All right. We start on a typical day. You're, let's say, 9 years old, and Heidi is probably 18 to 20 months at this point. Walking around, very vocal, teeth are coming in or ending up, you know, kind of at towards the end. She kind of has been crying a lot because of that and coughing a lot due to just, you know, I don't know how much they would have known about colic back then, but just not a happy kid at this point. She's just having a hard time. And you're playing outside and you're tired. Tell us about what your home life is beyond your sister Heidi. What kind of jobs do your parents work at? Being a doctor, did you grow up wealthy? Were you afforded an education that most people wouldn't have? How did that all work?
Yes, as a child, my mother was a dressmaker, did lots of sewing, taught me how to sew, would mostly work in the home, had a shop front downstairs from where we lived when we were in Paris and in France. And when we moved to Germany, just sold dresses out of the house itself. My father was a doctor, honestly, a big inspiration for who I am today. He was very well loved by the people in both towns, really. The people in the village in Germany knew him and his family. They were from a neighboring village. It was a peaceful life, other than Heidi. Even moving seemed like an adventure to me, rather than a challenge. The biggest challenge was my sister.
So you're outside playing, and there's a large tree not very far from where you're at. And you look up at it, and you notice that there seems to be a form inside the tree. It looks like a girl about your size, but with bark all over her skin and leaves for hair. She's camouflaged, and she looks like she's looking at you.
Bonjour. It is safe for you to come down. I just moved here. I would like some friends if you would like to be friends with me. I'm Hildegard. Would you like to be friends?
She comes down out of the tree, and she walks over to you, and she bends down, and you can hear the sound of the bark kind of moving. And her face is like smooth oak without bark on it. Very elven, very kind of beautiful face. She's got large eyes, beautiful lips, and this hair that kind of goes up, I'm going to say kind of like a fro would, just like a really big plume of leaves, and you can actually see, like, every once in a while a small butterfly will come out or something like that. And she goes, "You're the girl with the baby, aren't you? The one upstairs, your sister."
"I have no baby."
"No, I mean your
my
friend.
My mama.
Yes, yes." She sits down.
"Your hair is quite beautiful. I can't get my hair to do that, so I just braid it. But yours is really pretty. You have butterflies in your hair. That is so unusual. Can I have butterflies?"
And she whistles, and one of the butterflies comes out and lands on your shoulder. "What game are you playing?"
It is called Solitaire. I don't know if you know it. It's a game you can play by yourself. It's with cards and I go to show kind of the spread and everything that I'm doing. I don't really understand it, but I think I'm pretty good.
"Well, how about we play Go Fish?"
"Oh, you know that game? I play that with my mama."
"We could play it together."
Okay. I think Hildegard like hurriedly shuffles those cards, so excited for a new friend. It's been weeks, and the other children just kind of stare at her and don't really talk to her at all.
So you start to play Go Fish, and she goes, "Do you love your sister?"
"Well, I mean, we are supposed to love everyone in our family. That's what Mom and Dad say, and that is what the church says. But we don't really go to church like that. Not very much. I mean, I... Of course I love her. I just don't like her.
I understand. What would you think if she went to a better place, someplace where she could get the help she would need without having to cry so much? We do hear that she's sick out here in our tree.
She does seem sick. That's what I said to Papa, but he said that it's just something called cowlick? Some kind of illness that she must have, and he says it will pass. But it's been some time. I mean, she is more than 1 year old, and she still talks like this and cries like this and is so upset all the time. Would she go somewhere that has magic, like you? Because I think that maybe that would make her smile.
You're magic too, do you know that? You can see me. Not everyone can see me.
I'm magic too?
Yes, of course you are.
Oh, well, can I go to the magic place instead?
I think it's better for you to stay here to help us. If you're our friend, are you our friend?
Oh, yes. I would love to be friends. We are very close friends. I mean, right now you are my best friend.
I am going to be completely open with you and tell you exactly what the offer is. My people, fairies and people like myself, tree spirits and alike, only a few humans can see us like you. And so it's important for us to have a good relationship because we need your help. We've been having problems. Unfortunately, we have no way of feeding our children anymore. We don't get children as often as we need them. So we sometimes trade children with humans. We give them this baby that will grow up, but that is like us, that will get nurtured, and then one day it will either return to us or it will stay in the human realm and help us like we hope you'll help us, or it'll go to the fairy realm and stay there. And then what happens to your sister is she gets well taken care of, and then when she's old enough, she gets to make a decision about whether or not she wants to stay with us and help us in our realm, or if she comes back here. But you should know that if she goes to the fairy realm, you'll never see her again because, well, time is different there. Time moves faster here than there. So what seems like an hour there can be 10 years here. But you'd get a sister that wouldn't cry, and your sister, your actual sister, would get a life that was full of magic and the opportunity to do some real good in our land.
Oh, well, my mama says that we should want what's best for the people we love. And it sounds like her being in pain and her being upset here and making such a fuss and a stink, it doesn't seem like it would be the best opportunity for her to have to sit here in this place. If she could go and have magic every day, it would make her so happy. And if you bring me a friend, a child from your world, then maybe we could be closer, since I'm a little bit magic, and she would be a little bit magic. Would the new baby want to be my friend?
Most definitely. Most definitely. You would be the only one who would know that she's different than any other human. You would protect her and make sure that she got the love and support of your family. That if they ever had any doubts, I mean, she'll look almost exactly like the baby that your sister already is. But if there's ever any doubts in your mother's heart or anything like that, you'll be there to help make sure that they love your new sister as well. Do you think you can do that?
I like that. I like that. Papa was a soldier and he kept people safe. And maybe I can keep people safe. I can keep Heidi safe, or Heidi, too, safe. I will never tell her where she comes from, because I know it must be her decision if she wants to go back or she wants to stay here. But I just hope that Heidi one will not be upset that I did this. Will you tell her that I did it because I love her and not because I was just upset about her yelling all the time?
Well, remember, Heidi's very, very young, still not barely a toddler at this point. Unfortunately, Heidi won't remember anything from her life She'll think she was born in the fairyland. She'll think that magic is normal. She'll think that all the things that humans have left behind as they've become more interested in cogs and metal and steel, she'll not know any of that. She'll know the magic side of life. So she won't be mad at you. She unfortunately won't remember you. You'd have to be okay with that.
I think Hildegard kind of like squats down like a little tiny gargoyle. And like, there's like a stick that she's kind of just been like playing with and starts to kind of like draw in the dirt and the soil as she's kind of processing this information. Sort of chews on her lip a little bit.
Okay. I think I would like that. I would like to have a little bit of magic in my life every day. I would like to keep seeing friends like you, especially beautiful ones. And I would like to protect my sister. I think that I am grown enough and important at this point enough to be a protector. And then it doesn't really matter if I don't have lots of friends, because I have a quest that I am on. Mama reads me books, and I am starting to read books to... Well, I try to read books to her, but she just yells. But this new baby, I will read books to the new baby, and I will protect her. Like, you know, like from a dragon, or... Wait, do you have dragons?
They are around. There are dragons, but they usually don't appear much, just like giants don't really move very often.
Giants?
Yes. Anytime you hear of a volcano, though, exploding, that is a dragon letting out its breath.
Oh, my goodness. This world is so weird. I love it. Okay, what do I need to do? I would like to help you, but I don't know what I can do. I'm just only little.
Well, you don't need to do anything. We just, my friends and I wanted to tell you, give you the choice of what would happen, and you have made a decision. We will come in later tonight and we'll put down the new baby and take your sister Heidi with us. And as a token to say thank you, I'm going to give you this necklace. There's a necklace with a sunstone on it, and she hands it to you, and she goes, if you say my name into this, when you really need me, I will be there for you.
Oh, it is very special for a fairy to give you their name. What is your name?
Alfwin.
Alfwin. Oh, okay. Can I call you Al?
Sure.
I think Hildegard smiles like a really big grin, couple of teeth missing, and turns the stone over in their hand. And she just kind of like looks at it kind of glinting in the light. And I think when she looks back up, she has this kind of look of determination in her eyes and a little bit of a squint of realization.
You said you and your friends wanted to tell me about this. Before you go, may I see the other friends?
Of course. And she makes this weird clicking noise with her mouth. And suddenly the entire tree moves, and there's literally like 20 or 30 of these tree spirits that, now that you see, they make up the entire tree like a puzzle.
Are you here all the time? Just watching?
Yes, we are. We're in all the trees. We don't make up all the trees, but this is my family. We all live here. There were a lot more of us a long time ago.
Oh, hello. It is so nice to meet all of you. You are so beautiful. Wow. You have a new family member. I apologize for her behavior. She is very loud, but she's nice enough. Once you get to know her, sort of. I hope you can make her beautiful and quiet like you.
And they all kind of go back into the position that they were in. And she goes, I'm going to go now. All of these things move at once. You see them move back, and she says, thank you. I know that I'm your size. I'm short, like a kid. I'm not a child, though. I am an older fairy, and I appreciate what you've done. Like I said, if you need me, speak my name into that stone, and I shall come and help you. Okay?
Okay. I hope one day I can speak as straightforward and with much authority as you. You seem like a leader of the fairies, and I would like to be a leader someday. Or at least, you know, someone who is respected.
I'm sure you'll do fine. Goodbye, friend.
I learned a new phrase. Auf Wiedersehen.
Auf Wiedersehen, she says back.
I think Hildegard like does like a little pirouette. She is wearing a very kind of drab brown dress because she is going out to get dirty and her mom doesn't want her to wear anything fine. But it still kind of like floats around her as she kind of goes back into what she was doing before, but with this clearly dazed expression. The rest of the night, going through dinner, she floats through dinner. She's extra nice to Heidi, spends lots of time kissing the baby. I think both of her parents are shocked and very pleasantly surprised by this kind of change in conduct. I think before, Hildegard would just try to get as much distance from Heidi as she could, depending on the day. When she was quiet, she would sit and enjoy her sister's company, but most of the time would either need to leave or countless times they'd find her asleep, like in front of the fireplace, things like that, just trying to get out of that room. And I think the second that Hildegard gets into bed that night, she can't sleep.
Right. That makes sense. And plus, the baby's still crying. That doesn't help either.
Nope.
This is the time where the fact that you guys have two bedrooms in a house, usually there's not a second bedroom for a lot of families, but you all have a bedroom for the kids and a bedroom for the parents. And the baby's at a point where they will sleep through the night. It's kind of assumed that if the baby's crying, you'll get up and you'll deal with the baby. So you're watching and the baby's crying and you have the sunstone necklace on and you're playing with it and you're kind of looking at it as you're sitting there. And it starts to glow really brightly. And then Alcevin comes out of the stone and appears a few feet away from you with another tree spirit. And they are carrying a small, what looks like a doll, about the size of your sister, made out of sticks and branches, and what looks maybe like some human parts too. And they go over, and Alcewin turns to you and gives you the shh kind of thing, walks over to the bassinet, picks up Heidi, gently is stroking her back and her head and calming her down a bit. And then they put this new baby down, this stick baby, and you see them say something over this stick baby, and it starts to fill in with flesh. And it's the most fascinating thing you have ever seen. Because you can see like the lungs come in and the heart, and it's almost like watching a baby develop in sped up time. And it piques your curiosity, the organs and every what makes a human, and that process is going to take all the way until the morning when your mother comes in to get the baby. The tree spirits turn towards you with Heidi in their hand. And they walk over to your bed, and she whispers to you, "I'll always be with you. Take care of our child.
I will make sure that she grows up and she has a good life. Promise."
And she touches your sunstone on your necklace, and they suddenly aren't there. They just disappear in a flash.
Okay, Heidi 2, you are going to be much better than Heidi number 1. I mean, you already are. Look at you. You are a miracle. Oh, my goodness.
And I think Hildegard, like, obsessively watches
everything fill this. In.
Yes.
Yeah.
For the rest of the night. Like, when mom comes in the next morning, Hildegard has little dark circles under her tiny child eyes. Looks like she needs a cup of coffee, hair a mess, and can't take her eyes off the new baby. Is by her mother's side, at the baby's side, for the rest of the day, for probably the next, like, I'd say probably the next couple months, Hildegard is, like, obsessed with this baby.
So we're actually at this point going to fast forward a little bit in your life. You and the new Heidi, Heidi 2, actually grow very close. You are the great big sister that protects her and makes sure that everything goes well. And she ends up marrying a human. She stays in Germany. After a while, your parents decide to move back to France. And she doesn't know that she's a changeling. She doesn't have the sight like you do, because both of you have been places and you have seen fairies dance across the trees, and she hasn't said anything or responded to those things. You wonder why, if she's from these people, she can't see them. Then years later, you're a doctor at this point, and you're in a war. There is a battlefield all around you as people are shooting muskets and riding their horses into battle, and horrible, horrible things are happening. But you're reading, because it's the only thing that's keeping your mind from shattering, from despair, as the world around you feels apocalyptic. You know now what Vaisen are. You've done a lot of studying on them. There are a lot of books out there about fairies and whatnot. And you find that changelings get the sight once they realize who they are. Some never realize who they are. And so far, your sister hasn't been reached out to by her actual parents for whatever reason. And as you're reading this, you hear your commander yell, "Dr. Brunson, we have people coming in. We need your help."
Okay, set up a triage over there. Okay. Bring the bodies in here. How many dead? How many survivors?
Oh, we just left the dead out there. We couldn't get them. They're still firing at us. So we brought back 4 survivors.
Okay. There are beds over there. And bring them, please. You first, please come over here.
And I think she beckons to an orderly to try to like fill the bed closest to her and then kind of file them in after.
It's pretty gnarly. You know, like people are missing limbs or they've got gut shots and you know they're not going to make it. Some of them you just say, you know, pour whiskey down his throat, let the poor man go. And as you're going around, you notice that they had pulled in one of the enemies with all of the others. It is a young woman, probably maybe 22 years old. And she has on the uniform of the soldiers. So she has snuck into being in infantry. Because at this point, they don't allow women on the front line. Even though you personally probably feel that they should let anybody who wants to fight, fight. And she's coughing and there's a lot of blood and she has these big wounds around her abdomen. And no one else kind of realizes, because you're taking off her coat and whatever to get to the area that you need to work on. And she grabs you by the hand and she goes, "Don't, please don't let them know."
"I won't say anything. Your secret is safe with me. I'm just going to do my job. And my job is not to be the gender police."
She goes, "Thank you. So I can't live the way they want me to live."
I think Hildegard's face, once a bit impassive, softens.
"Yes, I have a little bit of experience in that myself. You wanted to fight this bad?"
I did.
"It's very noble. You should be proud of yourself."
"Well, you should know that your Kaiser's an asshole."
"Oh. Yes, I have been contemplating a move from this country for some time. I don't want to go to France, but I also don't wish to stay here. I'm doing my civic duty and gaining my expertise, and then I will take my talents elsewhere."
"Well, can I ask you a favor?"
"Yes, anything. What do you need? Whiskey?"
"I'm not going to make it. I've been shot twice, and I don't want to go through it. Trying to remove the bullets just to die in a horrible agony."
"Opium, then."
No opium. I don't want to, like, when I die, I'll be at peace. But for now, can you give me just a little bit of whiskey and give me a promise?"
"Yes, what do you need?"
"Will you take my body back to my people? Will you make sure that I'm returned?"
"Of course. Of course, yes. Leave me an address and I will do my best. Usually they don't mess with medical people trying to go across front lines, because we are, quite frankly, more useful if we are captured. So my risk is fairly low."
You get a piece of paper and you write down what she says to you. And she touches your arm again and she says, "May I have a kiss?"
I think Hildegard's eyebrows go up and she kind of like looks to the left and the right to make sure no one is watching. And they say, please take this into your next life, and leans to give the kiss.
And she kisses you deeply. And then she says, Alsvin told me you would be a good person. And she passes.
I think Hildegard gets goosebumps all over her body. First from the kiss. She hasn't had a lot of time for romance, being someone who studies and has been keeping her sister safe all this time. They are not someone who's had a lot of time for that. So this was a surprise and a delight, I think, for her in many ways, especially because she feels that this is just another form of protection. But I think upon hearing the name of Alsvind, backs up and like sits straight up, like back straight up, continuing to hold the corpse's hand. But I feel like it's one of those moments where a person can only stare kind of straight ahead and there's like a high-pitched ringing all around them. Like you're in shock. I feel like that's...
Shell shock.
Yeah, I feel like that's what's happening. That's what happens to Hilda in that moment, to Hildegard.
It takes you a few moments and there's another explosion not far from your location, your tent, and it knocks you back into reality. And you look down at this corpse and you hear the groaning of the other men in the triage, and you look down at her body and you realize that there are small pieces of sticks embedded into her flesh. So she was a changeling. And I would imagine that you hide this quickly. You sew her up as if she's still around so no one notices the fact that she doesn't have any real bones, that she's being kept together by wood. Your commander comes up to you and goes, he didn't make it. We were hoping that we'd be able to interrogate him. Well, make sure you throw him in the pile and we'll get rid of the body.
Yeah, so good. I will throw him into the pile outside. I'm just going to roll the corpse underneath this other bed while I take care of the other men. And then I will get on that. Thank you.
Good work. And he walks away.
I think she does her little salute, kind of straightens up, squares their shoulders until they're away. And then I think looks back down at the changeling and just kind of strokes her cheek once more before covering her with a sheet and then rolling her under the bed and getting right back into work.
Okay. Later that night, you sneak out. The fighting has stopped. There has been firefights at night. It doesn't happen very often, though, because it's very difficult to know even who's on your side, and the combat has been a lot. You dress yourself up in a doctor's outfit with the proper insignias, and you make sure not to wear anything of your homeland, just in case. And you roll the body out in a small wheelbarrow, and you take it back over across the lines in the middle of night. And of course, they stop you, and they ask you a lot of questions. And their general comes up to you, and he's much older than your commander. And he goes, why are you doing this?
Why am I being a decent human being and honoring the last wishes of someone who died in my care?
I see. Sorry, we've conditioned ourselves to hate intruders, but what you're doing is very, very noble. I apologize.
Merci.
He grabs a piece of paper and writes something down quickly, folds it up and puts a wax seal on it. And he says, if you get trapped or caught or there's a problem, use this and you will be spared.
I appreciate your flexibility.
Realizing that she has like this new lease, she leans into her French accent a little bit more.
Mm-hmm. Because it's probably going to be Napoleon that's fucking with them, so.
So she kind of like leans into that accent a little bit more, trying to quiet the more kind of Germanic sounds that she usually makes in combination with that very original French accent. And for the first time gets this feeling, like thinking about the kindness that was just exchanged between themselves and her patient, softens toward him. She's not usually soft like that. She can't afford it. But they just think in that moment, maybe this is what you need to do. They smile very softly and prettily, soft eyes kind of batting at him, not in a seductive way, but in an innocuous way. Yeah. And, you know, just kind of nods and does a little curtsy and kind of takes the paper and tucks it into the front of her apron pocket.
He says, "You remind me of my niece. Good luck."
"I appreciate it. Please, stay safe."
And you leave and you make your way back. And the war goes on. You become more, not detached, but you have to learn how to deal with the things that you see. And as a doctor, you get to a point where your bedside manner is not the greatest. But every once in a while, you work on someone that reminds you of the young lady who passed, who was hiding the fact that they were a femme, didn't want anyone to know, even had probably some kind of binding to keep their chest a secret. And every once in a while, you allow yourself the luxury of smiling. But also there's this other part of you, a strange part that is almost attracted to blood, to the sight of it, to the feel of it. Not necessarily dead people do it for you, but maybe having one in a vicinity doesn't hurt either. And it's something that worries you, but also is exciting. That weird space when you got that kiss, that bridge between life and death, is where your affections lay when it comes to who you interact with.
I also think she likes Vazen too.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah, that's definitely part of it. Vazen are very attractive to you. And because of raising a changeling and knowing what your sister is, you are open to having discussions with them. You know they're not all good. You come across a few that are just downright evil, but you don't have the bias that other people do. So you get a letter from Linnea talking about Uppsala. The war has been done for a few years, and you've had a private practice. It talks about studying the Vasen and how much they need you to restart this society. You had only heard a little bit about the society because when you were growing up, it was already gone. But most of the books about Vasen come from them. Tell me what you do to get prepared to go to Uppsala.
I think the first thing that Hildegard does is writes a letter to both their parents as well as their sister. In the letter, when speaking to their sister, it's a very indulgent letter, very emotional, very loving, flowery, everything's going to be okay. They don't let on, they don't talk about work, they don't talk about business, they ask how the kids are, they ask how their brother-in-law is. It's very, very flowery.
Soldiers never talk about what they actually went through to anybody.
No,
right?
No. Couldn't be further from it.
Yeah.
And they go to like a local artist and have them do two sketches of what she looks like now. The picture shows a very stoic expression on Hildegard's face, very neutral, almost closed features at this point. A very tall and strong and broad-shouldered person compared to the slight beauty that is Heidi. Heidi takes after their mother and maybe some other ancestors with how beautiful she is, whereas Hildegard clearly takes after their father. She doesn't really mess with the tiny mustache that she has, a little kind of light dusting of hair on their upper lip, a little bit of a unibrow that they kind of keep. Still very striking features, maybe not beautiful, but handsome. Very handsome woman.
Yeah, I was just thinking handsome.
Very handsome femme, yeah. And as always, as usual, her arms are crossed and they're wearing finery, like a nice dark suit with just sleeves rolled up kind of thing in the picture. And in the letter to their parents, they enclose two notes. One is for their mother, and it is more or less exactly the same as the one that they sent to their sister. The one to Dr. Brunson Sr. is shorter and more clipped, but contains far more details about the reality of her life. It talks about the solitude of being a medical professional, especially after going through war, the difficulties of meeting people, and a desire to have an adventure to hopefully shake that part of themselves that they left on the battlefield back alive.
Awesome. And we end the episode with you getting on a train after sending off these letters, sitting down in a nice car. You have enough cash at this point that you can live decently because of all the work that you've done. You also have some Patreons that are willing to give you money for helping their family and helping their sons and daughters during the war. And you sit down in the car, and as you're pulling away, you see this huge oak tree, and there's a tree spirit in the top of it, just turns to you and waves. It's not your tree spirit, but it's saying goodbye as you leave Germany. And that's where we'll end the episode.
Yay!
Cool. So that is your background. How did you like it?
I love it. It's wonderful. Poor Hildegard.
Yeah, so far, all of you have had pretty ennui lives.
Poor baby. It's very labyrinth. I didn't design it that way, but I realized that, like, as we were going through the scene, that it's
very labyrinth.
It's very labyrinth.
Yeah, any time that you have a changeling, a baby stolen by, you know, the Goblin King, you're pretty much there. Doesn't matter what kind of basin it is, it's the same. It's the same thing. But you know what? It's still cool. So it worked out well.
I love it.
Okay, well, why don't we tell people where they can find you, Candace?
Hello, everyone. You can find me at the Candace Marie on Twitter and Blue Sky, at Candace Magnificent everywhere else. If you would like to hear more of my AP work, please check out Bloom and Blight. You can also hear more of me in the audio drama The Albright, as well as Partial Veil, a new Eldritch-infused story about some mysterious happenings in the forests of Montana, wherever you catch your pods. If you would like to see more of me in AP form, please head on over to Matihi's channel every other Saturday on Twitch for What We Do in the Shallows, an original 5e queer horror pirate campaign where I play Drea Pandori, our resident snake folk rogue. We are currently on the run from, that's also got Eldritch horrors in it. So if you like Eldritch beasts, come on down. I'm running from one right now called the Deep One, and it's a disaster. So find out more. I'm always doing stuff. I'm always doing charity streams or guest spots, etc. So please take a look at my socials if you want to learn more about me.
And I am Wes Otis. You can find me at Plate Mail Games on all the different socials. You can find the show at 12 Sided Stories, the number 12, and then Sided Stories on all the different socials. Pick the billionaire you can stand the most and then come follow us on their platform. Thank you so much for joining us in this look back on how Hildegard became Hildegard. We will talk to you later. Bye.
Bye.